You're listening to WWBC Coco, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Coco, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Coco, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere. And Ellen is here this week to sing her part.
That's right. No, it's like I'm out of practice. On 1510wwbc.com. You can hit that listen live button and get us on any one of your listening devices. Of course, our shows are all archived there under the on demand button, and you can pick by date. But right after the show, we put it on all of our websites and social media, which is Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, or SitaMediaInc.com, which is the website. We put the pictures and the, you know, I clean up the show a little bit, make sure everybody can download it from there. We get about anywhere from 15,000 to 18,000 downloads a week. It's like crazy amount, the amount of people that we've connected with over the last 15 years, all because of your fantastic ways of keeping in touch with people.
Well, I guess it makes sense when your husband goes to bed at 9:30. You still have a lot of energy. So you could
and
go
three
and,
different time zones to be
so
dealing with.
So you could go and monkey around on Instagram and Facebook and TikTok and wherever and read and read and read and book people for the show.
That's right.
So Ahmed going to bed early actually helps our show. So for our listeners who are tuning in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, we have an action-packed show today. Ellen is here. She was not here last week. She had a lot of company visiting. You have people, what you hadn't seen in a long time?
Yeah, just friends that I haven't seen in a long time. And it was a nice day to just kind of go and see Brevard County and see it through their eyes because they haven't
tourist.
Been here in a while. I was for the tourist
stuff.
You know, spent a whole tank of gas.
Allie Tambor is here. Thank you for holding down the fort, Allie.
You
and
bet.
Danny, of course, is running our board. My name, as everybody knows, is Sita Biggie. And we've got in studio our good friend, Allie Kumar is here. Hi.
Hello.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
She's going to be on the first segment with us. And our second segment, Ellen, I don't know if you know this, but there's an author. Her name is Olivia Benson. She's also an attorney, and she is going to be calling in second segment. She's taking time off from her busy practice in Miami, Florida, to call in and speak about her book. And she's written a really wonderful book about, it's called For the Love of My Father. And it's a journey that she's experienced throughout her life about not having her father around and all the issues that you face as a woman with an absent father. And as you know, sometimes people can have a dad in their home and he's still absent.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
So we'll chat with her, second segment about that. But our first segment is on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is with Allie. And Allie, we've kind of taken Allie under our wings. She's like become like the daughter of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Aww.
Because we've kind of watched her grow. She came back to Brevard County, Florida in the height of COVID and realized that there was a need in a community for the young people, for people to think differently, to do something. And she did. She took the bull by its horns, so to speak, that bull in Chicago, you know, that red bull.
Yeah, that's right.
And she decided to open the Space Coast Swap Shop. Mm-hmm. But I like to think it's a belong to the Space Coast, right?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So talk to us a little bit, Allie. Welcome back to our show. I know Allie, the other Allie's happy to have you here. Ellen O'Neill is happy to have you here. And we wanted to hear a little bit about what you've been up to.
Yeah. Thank you so much for that warm introduction. So like Sita said, I came back from L.A. in the height of COVID, but I'm originally born and raised here in Satellite Beach, Florida. And upon my return, I noticed that there was a need for the art community and the youth to really connect. And I'm from a generation, and I'm sure every generation of youth feels this way at some point, the need to get involved in the community and do something and make an impact. And the impact that we wanted to make with our mission was tackling something called fast fashion. And if no one has heard of fast fashion before that's listening, fast fashion, in essence, includes garments of clothing that are made typically overseas in factories using unethical practices like slave labor, cheap materials that don't biodegrade very well, and basically break down over a couple of washes. Sustainable fashion is the opposite. So we promote sustainable fashion, things that are ethically and sustainably made, made of organic materials that can break down in a landfill, lasts hundreds of thousands of washes. Basically, a lot of vintage clothing is sustainable because our grandmothers have had it, our mothers have had it, and we can still wear it to this day. So we're trying to promote sustainable fashion here on the Space Coast and do it through music and the arts.
Awesome. It's so good to have young people that think about things like this, right?
And I tell you what, in Brevard County, the mobilization of the young people in this in our county has been amazing. Not just with the art and music and sustainability piece, but even in politics.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm so encouraged by the younger people and being able to be a woman in this town to be able to mentor some of the folks that are
around.
Yeah,
and you do
great.
See a lot.
Yeah.
So, Ali, what is the mission of Spacewalk?
Yeah, so our mission is to stitch the community together through sustainable fashion, music, and the arts. And time again, we pride ourselves in providing a safe space. And we're a grassroots effort. So all of our community has found out about each other through grassroots efforts like Instagram, word of mouth, social media, and really other collaborations. We've collaborated with Ways for Life, Community of Hope Brevard, Kids Dig Gardening, and many other organizations, New Life Mission. And we're so excited to continue to come together with different organizations that are doing great things in the community.
Well, the good thing about you is you went out there and you marketed Spacewalk and you met other people. And like you were saying earlier, you learned a lot about business.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. Ali Tambor, you heard what she was saying about business, right?
Yeah.
Isn't it wonderful that the young people would, by speaking to us, the older ones, they learned something?
Yes.
All the time, isn't, and that's our mission, right?
Is to I've help already learned just sitting here just these few minutes, you know, about that never really gave much thought to clothing that doesn't deteriorate, you know, or what not in the
biodegradable.
Ground. Thank you. That it's not biodegradable. Mm-hmm. That it's, you know, I never crossed my mind that. And so, you know, if you can enlighten us and bring it to people's attention, then it brings it to the forefront.
That's right. So, Ali, Spacewalk has evolved based on all the experiences you've gathered from being, I mean, you learn something new every day, right?
Yes.
And a lot of people don't believe that, but I do.
Yeah.
I feel like you do learn something new every day, and you learned a lot from being with people in the business community.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to our listeners here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends about the many challenges you face with opening your space area for clothing, your boutique, and how you took that and you went back to school and now you're a commercial real estate agent. But let's hear your story about what led to that.
Yeah, absolutely. So one thing that if you're not in the nonprofit world, nonprofit organizations are still businesses at the end of the day. You still need profit to do your mission. You still need orders and operations. You build out a board. You have to keep up with legal practices. You have to have a business bank account, insurance, the whole nine yards. So building a nonprofit from scratch, we had to learn all of these best practices because things can happen. We could get sued. We could get audited. Someone could trip and fall at an event. So we had to make sure we have every T crotted, every T crossed and every
that's
I
why
dotted.
Our show is fun, and
tongue twister,
and informative.
Try saying that 10 times fast.
It's Monday.
Yes.
I get it.
We're gonna use that word anyways. Yeah, yeah. We know what you mean. Cross.
Yes, exactly. And so, it was a whirlwind of learning how to operate a business, right? And
you had to have a business plan.
You need to have a business plan, exactly. And so we started doing clothing swaps, just pop-up clothing swaps, free for the community. And slowly but surely, we accumulated different types of overhead. For example, we would need to pay the artists that are participating or the bands or the catering.
Buy food.
Food, pay the venue. And so as these costs continued accruing, we needed to create a business plan of how we are going to pay for these costs. So that's when we started really leaning into other business partnerships, strategic partnerships that wanted to support our mission and accept donations, monetary donations, as well as clothing donations, and figure out a structure to get us to where we needed to go so we continue our mission. So after doing Space Swap for about a year and a half, we decided the next step for us would be to get into a brick and mortar. And so that was my first time getting my toes wet into commercial real estate, which is what I do full time now. So we got into the brick and mortar, and we were in the brick and mortar for 1 year's time. And it was an incredible experience. We made so many connections. We had over 100 events in that 1 year's time that we were in the brick and mortar.
And a lot of them were well attended.
Oh, very well
and
attended.
You, the nice thing is when you use some of the venues, you guys allowed people to come with their pets, their children.
Yes.
And it was good for the community, especially when you had the open air ones right after COVID.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Absolutely. Yeah, it was great for the community. We gave a lot of local bands their first time on a stage. A lot of artists their first time vending or teaching a class. And it really was an amazing, beautiful community space. So we were a thrift store by day and essentially a venue all of the rest of the time. But even with all of our efforts, we were at a point in our business where we weren't making the numbers that we needed to make to create a thriving business
right,
and
to
bring
sustain
on staff.
The business. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's such a great idea that there's a thrift shop during the day.
Oh, yeah.
But you know, Ellen, what a good concept, right? Like,
thank you.
A lot of people, you lock your business up at the end of the evening, 5 o'clock, and the air conditioner is still running. The toilet is still there. Yeah. You still have paper in the toilet, toilets, right? People can still use it. But then you use that space with trusted people.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
To use that space for something else. And I've heard of other businesses that do that as well.
Mm-hmm. There are restaurants that close at 2 o'clock and then open it up for folks that are bakers so that they can bake all night.
Oh, yeah.
So there's lots of those opportunities that are out there. And just the fact that people are starting to think outside the box where they wouldn't have thought that way before, and understanding that there are ways to cohabitate, co-mingle, co-work, shared space. And really where a lot of that idea came up, especially in the restaurant business, was when they had the commercial kitchen up here in Vieira. I think they believe they still do, that folks can go in and manufacture food products, label them, all of that kind of stuff right out of, and rent the space of that kitchen.
I'm Alexandra Kumara. I'm so proud of you that you did that because, you know, before we knew about Space Swap, we didn't really know of a lot of young people that wanted to give back to Bravada. So when you returned from L.A., from California, you were working in the film industry. What made you think that, hey, I could do this? And you have done it. And how can you, like, bottle and sell what you've done to other people so that they pattern themselves after you?
Yeah. So funny enough, I'm actually teaching a masterclass on event planning at the Brevard Cultural Summit this year on September 27th, which is the last Friday of this month. And I will be able to bottle it up and distribute it in that class so people can learn. But the logistics in which I use, I learned in LA working professionally in film production as an assistant director, and how we run film sets for professional film and professional TV shows is exactly how I run an event.
Yeah.
So I basically just copied and pasted. I didn't reinvent the wheel. I just use what's been working.
But how wonderful it is that you were able to do that. Like, like back then, it must have been like, oh, gosh, now I have to shut this down. I can't do it. COVID is here. But then you came and you said, wait a minute, I can take the experience from L.A.
Yeah.
And California, put it into action here in Brevard County, Florida.
Yeah.
And not only did you do that, but talk to us about the sewing shop. I mean, what a great concept to give people a way to brighten their lives and do something different.
Yeah, thank you for that segue. So I believe that it's not starting over if you're starting from experience. Every time you try something, you learn from it. Like for the shop, for example, if I went back and did it over again, I would keep everything we did, but I would put in another consumable product that can be reiterated time and time again. So another stream of revenue, for example, make it a coffee shop. I know that was kind of the trajectory and twists and turns that turn into Apocalypse Coffee from open mics, right? So just having more legs for your business to stand on in case one of those legs snaps, you have more in place. But moving into our new evolution of Space Swap and creating the Sewing Club, I love this because now we're leaning more into our original mission of sustainable fashion, and we're teaching people skills that they can take with them, they can teach others, and they can teach their children and their grandchildren, because sewing is quickly becoming a lost art, and if we can fix our garments instead of throwing them away and going out and buying new ones, then we're
going to
then we'll create a more sustainable future for everyone.
No, you're absolutely correct. You know, I was telling somebody the other day, I said, you know, I remember when we had, like, I was raised in a village, and, you know, people who were fortunate had a sewing machine. And the ladies would share that machine. Their husbands would pool money together to buy thread and needles for the machine. And I remember they would have like a bed sheet that probably had some holes in it and worn and tattered. But there was a certain corner of that bed sheet that you could make a skirt out of it. Or you could make a little shirt for someone. And, you know, when you're poor, nobody cares if you're wearing a shirt made out of bed sheet, if it's sewn correctly, you know. And that's what people did. They would take old dresses that belonged to a mom or grandma. They would unpleat them and make something out of it. People did that kind of, and you know what? We were happy people. We just didn't know how happy we were. We thought we were poor. We were really sustainable, you know.
Absolutely.
We were sustaining our village.
My favorite movie, it was Pretty in Pink. When Molly Ringwald, she took dresses from different, three or four different dresses, and one of them her dad bought and said, I know, you know, it's not the prettiest dress, but I know that you can do something with it. And he had bought it at a thrift store or something like that. And she turned it into, and that was my earliest remembrance of all of that.
Wow.
So, like, I would take, we were talking about this on break, I was taking T-shirts and making pillows out of them.
Oh, you make doll clothes. We made doll clothes.
Yeah. Oh, so, yes. So I mean, there's just so many things that we can be doing to be thinking about the environment and to be thinking about the fact that we don't need stuff. We don't need all this stuff. We
just got stuff. Quotation mark stuff, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So, Ali, how would you define the success of your nonprofit Space Swap?
Well, success to me looks like sharing information and knowledge and seeing the slow progress of our society becoming more conscious consumers. And I don't want to say more minimalist because maximalism is a vibe too.
Yeah, exactly right.
But just
moderation.
Yeah. Just to really think about what goes into things. It's like, you know, when you go shopping for food produce, you look at the label, you look if there's 100 ingredients, it's probably not that good for you. Same thing. They should put labels on our clothing. I mean, we do, right? But really,
but
like,
first you got to know how to read.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
We have an issue with a lot of people reading. We got banned in books and stuff.
Yeah.
But the thing is, if you put on a label made in Bangladesh where there were floods recently and so many people died and are homeless,
right,
it'll be more apt to buy that garment to support the shop that
right
has those sewing machines that's helping these flood victims. Or if you put on a garment, you know, made by the Rohingya Muslims who are suffering because they've got floods and they don't have blankets and it's cold and freezing.
Yep.
Who's going to take the time to read that label? But you're right.
Yep.
If you look at the label, like I was not one of these persons, but Bangladesh is very near and dear to us. We've had our friend Radwan Chowdhury that called in about his nonprofit and what they do for the people in Bangladesh with a simple thing like American sewing machine. Just donate a sewing machine, right?
Yep.
So you do make people think. And isn't that our role as we get older and bolder and wiser is to start thinking, like, you're absolutely correct about clothing. I find myself feeling guilty that I bought something new, right? But I notice oftentimes people would throw out stuff instead of darning it or mending it or stitching it, because we live in a culture where if you're the elderly is thrown away, furniture is thrown away, you know, people throw things away, whereas in other cultures, people don't throw things away.
Exactly.
And you're trying to instill that in people here. You, like you said, don't you don't want to take away their right to buy stuff, but think about it.
Yeah. In America, a lot of our population likes what's easy, right? If you throw something in the garbage can, you don't think it's your problem because the garbage man picks it up and then you don't see it again. But it is slowly becoming our problem. For example, we have to create a third landfill here just in Brevard County because the other two are getting capped out. So it is slowly becoming a problem.
Ellen's going to Google that right now. Google the t-shirt one. No, because the truth, she's right. So where are they going to put this landfill?
I'm not sure yet. I don't know if they have announced any site plans. They might still be having city meetings about it.
That's something for you to educate people about. And the way, you know, you're very calm when you talk. I mean, we have school children that would fight their parents for different shoes.
Yeah.
Right? But when you think about it, I mean, in the old days, it was such a form of discipline where we wore uniforms all our life and our lives when we were 0 to 18. Mm-hmm. And on Sunday evening, every child was required to iron that uniform, put it on a hanger, get your book bag ready, and your shoes, most important, clean your shoes. I see people wearing shoes nowadays that are stinky, filthy, even in nursing. It's like, so what has happened to us that we feel like, it's too dirty to clean it. I'll just throw it out.
Disposable.
But that is not biodegradable. A pair of shoes will stay in that landfill just like T-shirts. How do you take that this energy that you have, because what you're doing is wonderful, and teach our children in elementary, middle school, and high school to think before they toss things out?
I think it's a lot of times who we surround ourselves with. And as we're making sustainability cool, I think that's a lot of the issue, is kind of razzle dazzle and not bait and switch, but a lot of our events will be exciting and fun. And we would have clothing swaps and singers and all these fun things. But really, I think when people laugh and they enjoy, they learn. And so making these concepts, not beating into people's heads, like this is what you're supposed to do because we said, but to make it enjoyable, make it cool. I recently saw an ad with a young popular actress from a show, and it was a collaboration between Vogue and eBay. And she was like, this year I'm ordering my red carpet dress secondhand from eBay. And slowly but surely, so I'm from the millennial generation, but even the Gen Zers are extremely eco-conscious. And I really think it's becoming quite popular to thrift instead of buy. And I think we have this radical movement of this younger generation that I believe is going to do even more than us.
So thrifting is cool.
It is cool.
Yeah. So for listeners who are tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, we're speaking with our good friend Alexandra Kumara, and she is the CEO, the founder of Space Swap. It is a 501c, right? It's a nonprofit organization that serves us here in Brevard County, Florida. And she's moved on from doing some of the parts of Spacewar, but she's doing other things. And it's just enjoyable to just listen to what you're doing. So tell us, what's next for Spacewar? When is your next event, and how can someone contact you?
Yeah, so the easiest way to contact us is to follow our Instagram at space_swap. That's how we stay close in contact with our immediate followers. If you would like more general information, you can contact us on our website, spaceswapculture.org. And my email is alexandra@spaceswapculture.org. If you would like to inquire or get involved, we have different volunteer opportunities. And we meet the last Monday of every month for Sewing Club. It's a free monthly event that you can attend. We welcome all people, all ages. If you're a minor, please bring your parents. And you bring your own sewing machine, your own project to work on. And we're all teachers and we're all learners. It's not a structured workshop. It's more of a community.
Right.
And, yeah, we really enjoy it.
And if someone wanted to donate items like we did before, they can still let you know. You'll redirect them where to take it.
Yes.
Like you said, New Life Mission is open in a thrift shop.
Yeah, exactly. So to New Life Mission, or you mentioned Genesis House, and there's lots of different thrift stores around here that are doing great things. It's kind of a tricky subject, though, for me, because a lot of these...
You have to choose one over the
you
other.
You have to choose one.
Why don't you just say thrifting is cool?
Thrifting is cool, yes.
And, well, and like I was telling you earlier, we have this adult prom coming up in October, and one of the things that we said was one of the rules was that you had to go to a thrift store. So I sent out a list of all of the locally owned thrift stores and what charities that they support. So hopefully... once again, thrifting is cool. And I wanted to just kind of couple up on the T-shirt. There's a business now called an end-of-life supply chain. That's the name of the – that's the type of business it is of what we're talking about here.
End-of-the-life
end
of a T-shirt? End-of-life
supply chain business. And this one is called Super Circle, and they are heading up trying to get landfills or trying to get – something with clothing specifically, and one of them is one of those singers that you had mentioned.
Oh wow,
that was and I maybe get her name.
I thought you were gonna say they're gonna come pick up your end of life T-shirt.
No. But
maybe that's something we should start doing. Yeah. Pick it up and take it somewhere where it becomes biodegradable, because it is amazing how much fabric is out there that's not biodegradable.
They call them the Respun program.
Oh,
isn't
that's
that cool?
Cool.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice. Cool. So what are they doing?
They're collecting things, just much like what the Allie's doing, is collecting things and repursposing them and finding ways
so
to...
So end of life, not really end of life. They're going to give it life.
End of
breed
life.
Supply, yes.
Breed
supply
life into all things.
Cool. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, I love
that. So Allie, this was so cool. We'd love for you to stay on for the second segment with us.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
And really quick, feel free, because you are like a daughter of our show, Allie Kamara. If you want to tell us which commercial real estate company you're working for, feel free to tell us.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah, so I work with Reach Commercial Real Estate, and the CEO of our company is Cassandra Hartford, and she's incredible. She's been doing real estate here on the Space Coast for 15 years, and I have amazing colleagues, and yeah, so we just do commercial real estate. So
we're proud of you.
Yeah,
Ellen,
you
take it away. Danny's giving me the stinky eye. Jeez, Lord.
He's getting good at that, too.
You know, it's like...
We're going to listen to our sponsors real quick. We're just going to take a real quick break here on Viewpoint with Sita and friends. Allie Kamara, thank you so much for a great education on repurposing things. We'll be right back with Viewpoint with Sita and friends right after these messages.
Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. Delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture.
Are you longing for a taste of Louisiana? Lizette's Cajun Bistro is the place to be. They offer Cajun and Creole staples as well as American, vegan, and vegetarian options. The restaurant is located at 2447 North Wickham Road, Unit 146. All menu items are prepared daily from scratch and made to order. Dine-in or takeout as well as outside seating. Live music on selected weekends. So the next time you have a taste for Louisiana, stop by Lizette's Cajun Bistro, 2447 North Wickham Road.
Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000, 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere, Elle.
That's right. We share all of this great information on 1510wwbc.com. You can hit that Listen Live button and get all of us on your any one of your listening devices. And then, of course, we share all of that on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends on our social media, as well as on SitaMediaInc.com, which is our website. And you'll see all of the pictures, and you'll be able to search on that website for a topic or by name. We're on the 1510 WWBC. You just got to pick by date. And by the way, we are on each and every Monday here at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida.
Yeah. You know, your when Alexander Comero was talking about the sewing machine, I couldn't help but think about the women out there that when they lose their husbands, like I know of a case when I was a child or seamstress in our village, she raised her children with a sewing machine by sewing clothes for people. And so I think what you see as a child, it does shape your future. If you sit down and look at a woman whose husband passed away unexpectedly, and has to raise two children by the grace of God with a sewing machine. And she would sew with that machine from 6 in the morning till 6, 7 at night. And I remember distinctly the day she had to buy a pair of eyeglasses because she could not see to thread that machine. And I was probably, young then, 13 or 14, and I remember saying, oh my goodness, if she does not make enough money to buy that pair of glasses, she will not be able to thread that needle, you know. And that segues us into our other guest. We've got attorney Olivia Benson. She is calling in from Miami, and her book, she's going to talk about her book, For the Love of My Father. She was always puzzled, and she was also a deep thinker, it seemed, by the absence of her father in her life. And she's going to share with us about her book, why she wrote it, and, you know, what happened with all the trials and tribulations she had to go through. And she wants to share her story with others so that she can make a difference. So thank you for taking the time to call in, Olivia, and speak with us on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Thank you for having me. I'm so delighted to have the opportunity. And I heard what you were talking about just a few minutes ago. And it, like you said, it's a great segue because, you know, my writing and my work, obviously it can help men and women, but my experience comes from the fact that I'm a woman, and many of my life journeys and challenges and my processes have come through the experience of being a woman. And that's why writing this book was so important to me. I felt that I had been through so much as a result of growing up without my father, that if there had been one person, just one person, who could have put it together for me in a capsule so that I understood what this life experience was about and I could work my way through it, it could have made my life, I would say, not easier, but it could have helped me along the road.
Yeah,
and
to comprehend what happened. So you're a practicing attorney. You've been practicing for 30 years, a graduate of University of Miami School of Business Law, and you have a son. Talk to us a little bit why you decided to go into law, and was it something that you said, I'm going to be an attorney to help other children? It always, when people go into law, it's because they had an aha moment.
Yeah, it wasn't necessarily just about children, but it was about helping for sure. I thought that I could make a difference. And to be honest with you, that's really a great question, not necessarily directly related to the book, but a great question, because I came into law and with that illusion of, you know, I'm going to help people and this and that and the other. And when I began to practice to a significant extent, I realized that that's not everything that law is about. And many people are not in the practice for that reason. But I had to go through a series of things before I really learned how to make sense of using the practice, because I think everything in the world, really, for me anyway, and I think your feeling is the same, is really about service. What you come to do for the world and what you come to give. The gifts, the talents, the skills, the abilities that you have on how you come to help the world. So I got in and I was prepared for service. But as some of you might know, the practice of law doesn't always work that way. Sometimes people are very focused on money and there's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, you got to make a living and so on. But I think there's a balance. And so it took me a while to find a balance between my desire to give and serve and my desire to make a good living.
Right. And so as a child, you were always puzzled by the absence of your father. Talk to our listeners a little bit. When you decided to write the book, it must have been gut-wrenching. You had to sit down and lots of tears, I bet, because it's hard knowing he's alive, but he's not there.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and I think in the book I say, you know, like my life was a bowl of spaghetti. You know, there was so many things going on and so many thoughts, and there had been tears over the years many times. I think maybe someone can relate to this. When I got divorced, I was married very young and I got divorced, and I called my dad out of nowhere because I wasn't in regular communication with him. And I called him and I started to say, like, you know, like, daddy, even though we didn't have that really relationship, but it was the only daddy I had, right? That's all I have. So I kind of called him and I said it, and the next thing that happened was that I started bawling. I was bawling on the phone. And the most amazing thing happened. My father could not say a single word. He did not say he didn't hang up, which I always give him credit for, right? But
yes.
He had nothing that he could say to me. And at the end, this story's in the book. And at the end of the conversation, what he did do, he said, I'm going to send you $500, which he did do. which was, I say, in terms of, you know, how men relate, and particularly men of his time, he might not have had words, right? But the thing that he could do was to send me $500. And so that is just one story of tears and heartache and pain. And it was years of that process in order to be able to sit down one day and say, you know what? I am healed enough. I am well enough that I can put this down on paper with the intention that someone else can have this before they have to suffer in the way that I did. Yeah. That's the intention.
Right. And you wrote this book to help people to heal themselves spiritually, emotionally. It's like a path. You're giving them a path. Talk to our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends about the healing process and how faith and forgiveness helped you to move forward, because you were really stuck in that bottomless pit. Your soul had holes in it that needed to be, like we were just talking about, stitched back together.
Yes, it needed to be put back together. I always say you fill the holes in your soul and you can fill it with love and the love of God that kind of comes through you once you get to a certain point. And the word that you said that is the key word, and I know it's a hard word for many, many people, because there's been so much pain and so much damage in many of these circumstances, but forgiveness. There's a whole chapter in the book, and the title of the chapter is Forgiveness, A Pill to Take Like Your Life Depends on It. Because the minute, I mean, there will be no answers and no explanation to what this particular human being did by being absent in your life or by mistreating you or any number of things that could have happened in your relationship with your father. There will be nothing that will justify it. But the day will come that if you really want to heal yourself so that your life can be better, that you are willing to release all of the negative energy, all of the negative experiences that person created, you release it so that you are now clear. You're a bag, or I call it a bag of energy, but your energy is light. And now everything that you could be can begin to shine through. And as much as we want to be mad at them, the only person that can make us better is us by doing that.
So this is Allie. Hi. I was thinking through, did he ever talk to you long enough to give you a reason why he made himself absent?
He you know, that's such great questions. You know, he did not. First of all, I don't think, and that this is another thing I speak about in the book a lot, and that's compassion. Because many, and this is primarily also a lot of people of a prior generation, a lot of them, these particular kinds of men, they're just kind of going through life. And they don't really understand the impact of what they are doing. And the only thing that my father said to me once, because I kept asking him, and every time I would ask him, he would sort of have excuses and he would be very defensive. But one thing he told me that I can, you know, take with me for the rest of my life, he said, when your mother and I separated, I ran away from her. But I didn't realize that in running away from her, I was also running away from my children.
Yes.
This is many years later.
Yes, that is so profound, because Allie is even shaking her head here, little Allie, that a lot of men do that. I think they want to punish the woman, but they end up punishing the children.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
And so your book, you've got a lot of characters, and it's your life. It's true.
Yes.
And your mom played a great role in your book, in that she moved to New York City, then she went back home and she got married.
Yes.
And he came up here, but then it didn't work. So what did your mom say when you were writing the book, and how did she feel about this whole situation with him trying but then leaving again?
Yeah, I think my mom never recovered from this, I'll call it, this love in her life. You know, she was very, I'll just say, old-fashioned. You know, like she had this one love of her life, and she expected that when she returned there from New York, because I mean, you have to imagine her in New York living free, going to school. I mean, this is a big life compared to a relatively small
She was
country,
brave.
You know?
She was very courageous.
She was. And, you know, so when he began to behave, but, you know, he couldn't be anybody else other than who he was. She had been to New York. She had seen this life, but he was living that life. So she never recovered. Now, I will say what my mother did that made the entire difference in my life was that she was devoted to being a mother. She never remarried. She studied, and she eventually got a doctorate degree. She raised my brother and I, you know, she made sure that education was a thing. And this is the thing that I really would like people to get. Everybody has the capacity to change what happens going forward. Much of the issues that, you know, like, I don't know why my dad was the way that he was. But a lot of these issues sometimes come down in the generational line. But the thing is that today, as you and I sit here and whoever is listening, you have the capacity to heal yourself and thereby help to heal your children. So this is not repeated. Because if you don't heal it and you're a woman and you get involved with, you know, some guy who really doesn't treat you the way that you deserve to be treated and doesn't treat your children the way that they deserve to be treated, now the story is repeated.
Yeah, so somebody has to break that cycle. And I think everything comes down to communication.
Yes.
And education, mm-hmm. right? Because we all see that children need guidance from both mother mm-hmm. and father, and a father's presence in a child's life is like a backbone for development, yeah. additional security, for skills. It's a fundamental role model as well as a mom. But if yeah. people could sit down when they split up and say, this is what we have to do for the betterment of the child, it makes yeah. a difference. But your story is like a movie because he was not in the same country. He had moved overseas, and so now you have to get money to buy a plane ticket to come see your child, or you would have to go there. It was complicated. Yes. So it's good in a way that you were able to forgive him through such heart-wrenching memories that you have. Yes. So talk to our listeners a little bit about, you know, the self-esteem issues. The lack of learning life skills from him, the lack of getting yes. a hug from him, all those yes. things had an impact on you.
Absolutely. There's a part in the book where I say it's like, you know, like you have a computer and your memory banks are absent information in the computer memory banks. We're supposed to have information that daddy has provided, information. One of the big things that I talk about often is information about choosing. I also speak about having a broken picker, right? If you don't have the right information in your data banks, when it comes time to picking, right, the man in your life, your mate, you're just completely off because the message that you have gotten is, well, one of them I would say was, you know, you're not important, right? If he's not showing up, if I'm not seeing him, if he's running away from me, if he doesn't have a good word to give, if he's not seeing me and saying, oh, this is my daughter, blah, 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 clearly I am not important. So my sense of worth and my self-esteem is kind of up in the air. Now, I was fortunate because my mom was there and I had other family members, but in terms of that information that's supposed to go in that area of the computer, it was blank. And I say also in the book, it was blank, and what you do is you reproduce blank. So now you choose a guy who's absent, right? He could be physically present, but in essence, he's absent.
Right, and so many people have that. I mean,
We hear often about people who are anxious and depressed and going through so much emotional turmoil in their homes, and the father is there, the mother is there, but they're not really there. They're physically in the house, but not mentally or emotionally there.
Correct. There's different kinds of absence. You know, obviously my story is he's not there at all, right? Physically, emotionally, no way. There are other circumstances where you have, you know, he's there, but it's kind of like a torture because he's kind of there, but he's not interacting with you. And sometimes that can be even more difficult, or he's interacting negatively with you so that he's making what I call deposits into your bank account with bad information. That's even worse in some circumstances.
Yeah, I think the absence of a father as well, it doesn't end in childhood. It extends itself to beyond childhood, shaping the interpersonal relationships you have with people going forward as well.
Yes, and you know, that's interesting because it's not just your mate, but it can shape how you deal with all men, right? For example, if you believe this is how men are and you haven't explored that and you haven't cleaned up, right? You haven't cleaned up the situation. Now it's not just your daddy, it's all men, right? All men are this or all men are that, which is not true at all, even though we tend to generalize. It's not true. But because you've taken daddy, that imprint of that person who brought you into the world, and now you kind of spread it across. And until you do your cleanup work, until you are clear of all that weight, you really don't see the world. I say it's like walking around with a patch on your eyes because you're only seeing half the picture because you've been so affected by your experience.
Right. And I have to, you know, for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with attorney and author Olivia Benson. She's calling in from Miami, Florida, to talk about her book, For the Love of My Father. And Olivia also wrote a second book. It's called A Spiritual Guide for Woman Healing from the Absence of a Father in the Age of Spiritual Evolution. Now, I would just want to say, by speaking to you, I think you probably have to write another book about the different forms of an absent father. Because they are there, but they're not there, you know? You understand what happened with you. And if you didn't have that village of your mom and her friends and the people, and I think it's cultural as well, yeah? Because, you know, you're Hispanic and I'm Indian and, you know, we see that a lot. But, you know, I was going to say that oftentimes people's life experience comes into play on their job, right? So when you see people in your practice, I bet the first thing you think sometimes is, let me look at the circumstances, how these people were raised. Because that has a lot to do with people's life economically, financially, emotionally, the stability. If you didn't have a proper foundation, it hampers everything in life.
Absolutely. Sometimes you can look at someone, and fortunately for me, I've gotten to the place in my life where I can look at someone and, you know, their, let's call it in quotations, their bad behavior. You can see that it's something that's happened to them. That doesn't mean that you don't have to respond as you have to respond, but it's not just something off the top. It's like you said, it's a family issue, a relationship. It's something in foundationally about them has caused them to have this kind of behavior. And, you know, I love that you mentioned the second book. The name of my second book it was really the first. It's called Answers from Within. And it's a spiritual guide for finding answers to work-life issues. The second edition is coming out shortly. This first book is For the Love of My Father. And this one is a spiritual guide for healing issues related to the absence of a father. So, and both books are available on Amazon. They're also available on my website, Olivia S. Benson. And of course, I'm on Facebook, Instagram, all the different things that are out there just with my message, because I'm dedicated. I know I can help somebody go through this process better than I did.
Okay, we have a guest in our studio today, and she's nodding her head pretty much with everything you're saying, and she's got a question.
Hi.
Yes.
Alexandra here. So what is a practitioner of New Thought and metaphysics?
Well, okay. So it's interesting because I have my simple definition of metaphysics is just that we look at things beyond physical appearances. The word itself, meta, beyond, and then physics, beyond the physical. So that's what we're talking about when we say metaphysics. And then New Thought is a spiritual, let's call it a spiritual movement that started, I guess, at the beginning of the 20th century, where they said, you know what, we are going to examine our spiritual and religious beliefs by going beyond literal interpretation of certain things that we have believed, or literal interpretation of the Bible, or the traditional beliefs about life and God and spirituality.
That is so beautiful. We were reading your bio, and it says you're a lifelong practitioner. That is so, that's so cool that somebody could explain that to us, right? Because in addition to being an attorney, in addition to writing, you also find time for faith. So how did faith play into your life? What role did it play to help you to heal from not having your father in your life to tuck you in at night, to come to your baseball or games or dance or twirling or whatever you did? We have 2 minutes left. And there must have been a lot of things, a lot of effects of his absence that played on you at night when you went to bed.
Listen, I can only say this. I have this thing that I say to myself. I only breathe because God breathes in me. I only exist because God exists in me. Faith is everything. And if whoever has an opportunity to read this book or Answers from Within, the second edition will be out shortly, will see the stories. Like, God has always sort of come out and held me up, even in the worst of circumstances, even in the absence of my dad, even growing up as a girl where, you know, some women can grow up or a girl can grow up and think, my dad's going to come to save me, or somebody, I say, coming down from the hill to save me. Growing up knowing that nobody's coming down from the hill to save me, but knowing that God would.
Right.
Every single time.
Right. And, you know, Olivia, we have 1 minute left, and you know, one of the things I admire about you is a lot of people who don't have a father figure, they have to deal with academic struggles and all that, but you didn't, by the grace of God. And I know in your practice, you see a lot of girls who, you know, women are supposed to take care of children. We have a big thing in our country right now with a woman's right to choose, but you see a lot going on with the men who are in prison and who cannot be there for their children. And that would be a show we'd like to do with you later on. So really quickly, in 30 seconds or less, if you could tell us some of the effects you've seen with a father not being in the home because he's in prison or jail or locked up. I mean, that must be pretty difficult as well as an attorney seeing that and knowing what you went through.
The thing is that, you know, if you are in jail, you might be somebody listening right now. I said this, and I think I posted it on some website. I would have rather to know that my father fought for me and fought to be in my life, even if he lost, than to know that he never even tried. Now, your kid at home, you know, if you're locked up in jail, might be going through some pains and some pangs of distress. But at the end of the day, if that child makes it, what's going to make them stronger and have some sense of self is to know that daddy cared enough to keep fighting and to keep being present and to make those calls from jail and to try to have those visits. But to grow up and to know that he never even tried, that's debilitating. That's debilitating.
You are so correct. We always say that, you know, if you have faith, friends, food, finances, and family, you're good to go. And boy, your book is about them. Add one more to that, forgiveness.
That's right.
And tell Ellen, will take it away from here. Tell us where we can find a book, and then she'll take it away from here.
Okay. Well, again, the book is available on Amazon. It's also available on my website, oliviaethbenson.com. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I'm on YouTube. Please follow me on YouTube if you enjoyed this. Please follow me on YouTube and all the other social media. But
we will make sure that we will make sure on all of our posts that we get all of that information out so that way people can share and follow and like you on all of those platforms. Thank you so much for sharing your story today. And again, another fantastic edition of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Thank you, Alexandra. Thank you, Olivia, for tuning in today and being on with us on the show, sharing the airwaves with us. We will see you next week, 1 p.m. Eastern.